One. And welcome to the Q&A episode for June 2017 of Weekly Manga Recap. I'm Nick, here alongside Chris. It's time to ask questions and answer questions.
We're going to answer all the questions,
such
Nick.
Such as, are you ready, Chris?
How did that go? Bah, bah, da, da. Fuck, how did the old DX theme go?
Well, it sounded like shit.
Damn, I'm trying to remember how the old DX theme went. DX theme lyrics. Oh, that's right. And it's like, you think you can tell us what to do? You think you can tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? It's like, well, then Billy Gunn and Road Dogg, then yes. I think I have a little bit there. They're like, yeah, fair enough. That's our obscure wrestling reference to start off an episode, by the way. We got that one out of the way quickly.
Also K-Quick. I could be K-Quick, I'm pretty sure. So.
Yeah. Guys, we got a lot of questions. We got a lot.
We still got the big old backlog, but keep on sending them in. I know there's a joke about how far behind we are, but don't rest on your laurels. We will catch up, and then you'll be sorry.
Yeah, then you'll look like quite the fools. How much egg will be on your faces then? But in addition to the...
Then they'll just ask each other questions, and they'll be really stupid ones.
Yeah, I'm like, Nick, how tall would you have to be an NBA player, like, if you had all the talent? Like, what would be your dream NBA height?
If you had all the talent, then the height wouldn't really be necessary.
But you get to choose the height. Like, so would you choose to be, like, a little short person who's, like, insanely, like, good? Or would you be like, no, I want to be, like, 7'4", so I die when I'm 40, but I'm the most amazing player ever. No one can stop me from shooting.
My posture will have decayed to the point that I'm only 6'2".
He'll leave a beautiful 6'5" corpse in that casket.
I've had to put wooden rods in my knees. I don't know why they're wooden, but they are.
It seems like such a bad thing to put in your knees. It seems like it's so easy to break that.
It's easier to break now. What the hell were you thinking?
Yeah.
It was cheaper than the metal rods. I'm very cheap.
Yeah.
You make millions of dollars each year from being the one who does
NBA. You're the best NBA player ever. How are you this cheap? You're like, I don't know. Guys, but in addition to the many questions we've gotten, we've also been getting a lot of answers. So that's how I think we're going to start things off, by reading some of the answers to the question we posed to our audience back in May. And that question being that if you could have any Shonen Jump or any manga character that would be your mentor, who would you want to be? Or alternatively, if you wanted to mentor a Shonen Jump character or any other manga character, who would you want to mentor, essentially? So we got a couple really good answers to this. One we got was from Glock3BB, who says, if I could be mentored by one character, I would choose Minato Namazaki. He is a great teacher and a leader who saw some of the worst that the ninja world has to offer, but was still able to keep an upbeat attitude in life, plus eventually learn how to teleport, be dope. However, assuming I can't get awesome magical ninja powers, I would choose Dojima. As with Minato, we've seen he's a respected leader of Tatsuki and an effective teacher, and it would be awesome to learn how to cook from one of the best chefs in the world. I could see that. It's actually...
Dojima seems like a cool guy, man.
Yeah. And it's actually a very common theme that we got with a lot of our answers. A lot of people, if they were to be tutored by someone, they'd want to learn cooking, because we got a question or another one here from Gurr, who I'm going to say last name withheld. I think it's a fake name that they use. They put it in the body of the email, so I'm not sure, though, so I'm just going to be safe on it. He says, real answer, I would like to learn cooking tips from Soma. Boring answer, yes, but it would be the most useful in my real life, which is perfectly understandable. And then for fun answer, he says, I'd learn where a stone arrowhead is from, a stand user. I wants me one of them muscle ghosts.
Wants me one of them muscle ghosts.
You know, I get that too. I 100% get wanting to have one of the muscle ghosts.
Give me a stand.
Yeah. And last one we got here is Pheasant Tail, who would want to mentor and be mentored by Luffy. Says, I'd both like to mentor and be mentored by Luffy. Oda has confirmed Luffy to be asexual, like myself. So maybe I could mentor him on the commitment and basically just life as an asexual. And as a recovering anorexic who is constantly worrying about food, I'd appreciate Luffy teaching me how to just enjoy eating again. And I think that's true. Luffy definitely can give you a lot of advice on just being like, what do you mean you don't want to eat? It's great!
Obviously something's wrong with you. Let me punch you until you're hungry.
Yeah, it's just like that there's meat here and it's not in my mouth. Thus there's a problem. So far, very good.
Stop drinking. Stop it.
Yeah. Got a lot of very good answers from our listeners for this month. So thank you all for that. As always, we'll pose a question to you then. And if you want to answer it, just send an email into weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. So our question that we're asking for you to send a response back to us for July is, I want your biggest hot take on manga. And if you don't know what a hot take is, essentially it's a way of saying, what kind of crazy...
In general.
Yeah, just in general. What kind of crazy, unpopular opinion do you have in regards to manga? So this could be anything. It could be big. It could be huge. Like, I feel like One Piece is the worst manga to ever exist or something like that. Or it could be small. You could, you know, just be like, look, I think Bartolomeo is trite and overdone or something like that. And this could be silly or it could be serious. You can go anyway, but I want your biggest hot take on manga. I want to know what you've got that can just fire up people immediately when they see that opinion out there. So send those in. Remember, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com, and just make sure to put answer somewhere in the title. That way we know immediately at a first glance that this is an answer, and that way we can get your answers possibly read next month on our Q&A episode.
Mm-hmm. All right. So before we get into answering some emails here, we have questions for each other, right?
Yes. Yes, we do. So I've been heard.
I can start off.
Yeah, I could do that, or yeah, go for it, Nick. I believe in you.
All right. Okay, so I love video games very much, but I have a lot of people in my Twitter stream who do. So been hearing stuff about, you know, E3 going on, E4 stuff that people are like, oh, that looks stupid, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there, you know, are one or two things that people are, you know, super excited about, like I saw a fair amount of stuff like, oh, you know, there's going to be another Metroid Prime game. And thing that some people seem to be excited about is the Dragon Ball Z fighting game.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, what is the nerdiest thing you can remember getting super excited for? Like, saw that got you really excited, or an E3 thing even specifically that made you like, oh, I have to have this right now and I will dedicate my life to getting it or something like that.
I'll give an E3 example just a moment, but the first thing I kind of thought of when you said like something being announced that got me crazy excited was, I remember being so stoked when Marvel unveiled what like the Phase 3 of their movies was going to be. Cause it was like, it was watching it in real time. So, like, I wasn't actually able to watch the, presentation, but I watched like an updating sort of, I don't know what you'd call one of those things, or like a reveal document or something like that. So it's all these people be like, holy shit, Black Panther movie! Oh my god, Captain Marvel's getting her own! They confirmed it's gonna be Carol Danvers! And it all ended, because if you never saw the presentation, they went in the order of the movies. So the first thing they did was announce the third Captain America movie was gonna be, and they teased everyone at first. They're like, so Captain America, we're super excited about that. The third Captain America movie is Captain America versus the Serpent Society. And they kind of threw that up there. And then at the end, he's just like, you know, that Captain America one doesn't look right. What about Captain America Civil War? Holy shit! And they had, Captain America, like, they had Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. come out at that point, and then Chadwick Boseman came out as they unveiled him as Black Bear. Like, it was such a super hype fucking conference, if you're like a huge Marvel fan.
I had no idea that this actually happened.
it was lit, Nick. It was lit. But as for E3, I think one of the ones I remember getting the most excited about was when they were doing the announcements for Brawl. Was that the third Smash Brothers game? And just when that like teaser came out and they were showing off all the new characters in it, and it's like, oh, hey, Wario, Pit, Zero Suit Samus. But just the end being like, holy shit, wait, what is this? This looks like Metal Gear. Holy shit! They can have characters from other franchises in here now! Oh my god! That shit was awesome.
That is a fantastic game trailer, honestly. Yeah. Just the way it's paced out, the big reveal at the end. I've never played any of the Metal Gear style games, so I wasn't particularly excited about who it was, but the way that it was done, I thought was really cool.
It was extremely awesome, and I remember.
Of course, months later, they had the Sonic the Hedgehog trailer. It was like,
Well, that was the thing, is that I was thinking, like, after that was done, there was a site called, I think it was Smash Dojo. Don't go to it now. I just tried going to it, and it sent me to a virus website, so don't go to it now. But at the time...
That's what it was, though, yeah. They had, like, daily updates every single weekday.
Yeah, and they'd show you... Released. They would show you something like, oh, here's what this new character... Like, sometimes they reveal characters to it. I think that's where a couple of them sometimes actually were revealed.
Characters,
stages...
assist trophies... And there would be people who would be like, tonight, this is a preview of what's going to happen. People would make fake updates in order to troll people.
Yeah. But it was a cool time. It's weird because I have played actually very, very little of Brawl, actually. I spent so much time getting hype for it, but just never bought a Wii to play it. So it was a lot of time that really didn't have a payoff for me. But it was pretty, like, exciting just watching the updates happen for that that game.
Yeah, sure.
All right, I got a quick question for you, Nick, but this is one I'm curious to hear your opinion on. This is something that's kind of, maybe this is old hat by the time I'm bringing it up now, but for a period of time, this is definitely the big topic at hand when it came to, like, talking about, like, the new youth culture of things like that. Nick, fidget spinners, what say you?
I don't give a fuck.
Well,
like, I don't get it, honestly, like... I understand the anti-vape culture thing because they have spun out from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, people do, like, fucking vape tricks, and after vaping draws attention to you because, you know, there's freaking clouds of vapor that are coming from you. But if you've got a fidget spinner, if you go onto the goddamn side of the road and you've got, like, five fidget spinners and you're trying to do, like, put out a fucking sideshow or something like that, then, yeah, you could be annoying. But in general, it's like, okay, well, you're in the workplace, you're in your office, or you're at home, and you're keeping your body occupied while you're thinking about something, and so you pull out this toy, and you fiddle around with it. Who gives a shit? Like, people have had that kind of thing for decades. There have been variations on just having a small little thing. It's a stress ball. Who cares?
Mm-hmm. A lot of people I know have very, very strong opinions about it, which is strange to me because, as you said, it's not really anything that shocking. Because I actually didn't know what it was. I only found out about it essentially from, I was watching a streamer who had one, and he was just kind of using it because it was something his wife got him, and he often, like, kind of, like, you know, was clicking a lot on screen when he was playing a game. He was playing a card game, so he'd click a lot on stream when he wasn't playing. So I think it was just something to do to pass the time when it wasn't his turn to play or something like that.
Sure.
So that's where I kind of got introduced to it from. And then after that, it was just finding out, like, because I have a lot of friends who work in retail who are just like, I'm so fucking tired about people asking me where fidget spinners are. I think we should make a WMR fidget spinner, Nick.
WMR fidget, just have, like, just get a regular fidget spinner and then just scrawl on it in Sharpie. I ran out of room.
Yeah. Or we just get a fidget spinner and just, you know, quietly draw anime things on, like Dragon Balls or pirate logos from One Piece on it, and we sell them as anime fidget spinners and collect massive profits.
Unlicensed. Yay.
Yeah. That's why I say we do it super quietly. Or, like, we misspell One Piece, and that way we could, like, say, like, no, this is our own series. One Peke, obviously.
One Peek?
Yeah. One Petch. It's, you know, it's a pretty cool new thing about pirates. It's unrelated to what your thing is.
Yeah, you know, with the pirate Monkey D. Luffy.
Yeah, exactly. But, all right. There we go. We learned a little bit about our favorite announcements, and we now know where WMR stands on fidget spinners. So let's get to the questions you guys have asked us, as we have a good backlog still to work through.
Yep. So we're gonna start off. I can read the first one, I guess.
Sure. Let's go for it.
First one's gonna be from Andre Golden. Dear Y, the Ruler of the Sun, and Moon T, I feel like I really won out on that one.
you know, I guess.
I love the new Pokemon game and the amazing things in it, but I'm curious about your thoughts on your favorite legendary Pokemon. The legendary is the Yaga. It's a steel dragon that looks badass and has dominion over time. What more do you want?
Man, I couldn't... I hate almost every legendary Pokemon from Gen 4 onward, so they would not show up on my list. My favorite legendary is probably Zapdos, who just happens to also be my favorite Pokemon as well. I just, like, as a kid, I thought Zapdos looked cool, and that's...
It does look cool.
And like, Pokemon's just one of those things you kind of have to have, like, it's the nostalgia for it that hooks me to it. So, even though I recognize Zapdos isn't a very, like, isn't, like, a great Pokemon, isn't even the best designed Pokemon, anything like that, it's just like, but that's what I liked when I was 10 and the game came out, so of course it's still my favorite sort of thing.
It does look good. Actually, now that I think about it, it's kind of weird the way that, like, you encounter the birds in the first generation, because Moltres is somewhere, like, in the caverns of Victory Road. Mm-hmm. Articuno is on the Seafoam Islands. And that doesn't hang on the power plant.
Yeah, which you don't have to go to, I think, for really anything. I might
you
be forgetting.
Don't. I think you can pick up, like, one thing to turn one thing on, but...
I don't remember anything too significant being there, but...
Not really.
Yeah, I like Zapdos. There's a couple of the legendaries I can dig. I like Deoxys from Gen 3, I thought was kind of cool. Groudon. That's about it. I mean, like, most of them I don't have an issue with, but the further in, like, along the generations go, the less I enjoy them, more or less. There's just too many at this point.
Gen 4 does have a shit ton of legendaries.
Gen 4 is bullshit. There's so many goddamn legendaries in that thing. It's nonsense. Wait, like,
there are three legendary sprites that all do the same thing.
Yeah, that all look identical, have the same type. It's like, God, how boring are these things?
Well, you know, they've got very slightly different statistics and movesets. Who cares?
Who gives a flying fuck? If I have to catch all three of these things, I want them to look different than a different colored head bobble. Blah.
All right.
Good question, though, Andre. Questions here from Mike. He says, hey, Chris and Nick. First question. We know JoJo's Bizarre Adventure has been referenced in several media, and a recent example would be Megumi and Kurokiba manifesting stands. My questions would be, what powers would you give them, and what part would you either put them in, and how well would they fare in that part?
I'm not really sure about how to answer this.
You know, Megumi's actually really easy, because there's actually a stand in part 4, which is probably the part she'd make the most sense in as well, where there's a cook who has a stand that basically cooks into the food he makes, and when you eat it, the stand basically, like, it fixes the problems you have with you. Like, not to spoil it, since part 4 is something we'll eventually get to, but, like, the person who eats it, his teeth start shooting out of his mouth. And it looks horrifying, but it's like, then he grows new teeth that fix, like, the, you know, the overbite he had or something. Or he just starts, like, vomiting up blood. It's like, oh my God, what's happening? It's like, oh, it's because it's fixing your intestine problem you've had this for a while. Like, it's a stand that helps people essentially via food. So that would be, like, a perfect stand for her.
I don't know if I have a reaction to it, but, yeah, that'd be.
Yeah, I think she'd wish there was a more, civil way of doing
I'm
it.
Sorry.
But that'd be one that fit for her. As for Kurokiba, I don't know. There's a lot of stands that could fit. I mean, you could just go, like even just say Magician's Red, since he's got a fiery personality or something like that, but,
You do something that, does with his fish specialization, though.
Yeah, there's a couple stands that kind of relate to that general area, but, I don't know. I think if you were to say where would Kurokiba fit in all of it, I mean, if you're not trying to, like, go outside the bounds of where he fits in his story, again, part 4 would make the most sense because it's the most grounded of all the parts. But I don't know why. There's a part of me that feels like he'd feel somewhat fitting in part 6, even though it takes place almost entirely within a prison. But I just feel like, tonally he feel kind of at right with that part. But, I don't know. I guess that's where we'll go with that. Second question. Have either of you read the Doujinshi Clamp manga or manga Clamp did on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure? So what are your thoughts? I think
this
we mentioned
the time we've gotten asked about this.
Yeah, we got this question last time. Neither of us have read it, and I think we answered it on there. So question 3 for a non-JoJo question. What are your opinion on mascot characters? Do you like them, hate them, tolerate them? Do you have any favorites, or do you have any that you loathe?
It depends. Honestly, on if the character themselves is entertaining or not. You know, it's all based on taste. Like, I like, from iShow 21, you know, the Damon Devil Bat, and, I really like Hawk from Seven Deadly Sins. And all the other cats from Fairy Tail.
I'm trying to think.
Also, Khan was pretty cool. Was pretty cool at first in Bleach, and then he got stupid.
True. Let's see. So I guess Chopper would count for one of them, right?
I'm not really sure. He seems a little bit.
I think that kind of character. Originally, he probably fit it. I think he's sort of shifted away from it now. I'm trying to think like what qualifies as a mascot character. Because let me give you an example. I don't know. Have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Baby Groot.
Does Baby Groot count as a mascot character?
That's the thing. Like, I mean, I think that he does.
Because I hated the shit out of Baby Groot. I can't stand Baby Groot. I don't like.
I think way overused in that movie, honestly. Like, relied far too much on look how cute he is.
I've always had a thing where I just don't like baby characters and things. Like, I always hated Togepi in Pokemon. I just hated it. I was like, shut up. I don't like you. You don't do anything. You just fucking, you make cute noises, then wander into trouble sometimes. I fucking despise you.
But it uses metronome, Chris.
I'm like, I don't care. Give Misty a real Pokemon. Fuck that nonsense. And it's the same
also,
sort of thing.
Also, why aren't you water type?
Yeah. And it's the same sort of thing with Baby Groot, where I was just like, fuck you. Do something. I'm tired of you. I don't like this dancing scene. It's going on too long. I don't get it. Why won't you let fucking Drax see you dancing? Why do you still stop? What would happen if he saw you dancing?
Honestly.
Yeah. I don't get it.
I do wish that we had gotten more moody teenage Groot.
Yeah. No. I want regular Groot back now at this point.
Regular Groot was the best. I mean.
let's be real. All right. So yeah, those are our questions then. So thank you very much, Mac.
Okay, this next one's going to come from fucking email. Oh. Who?
It's Bladezer.
Right. There we go. Hello. Chris is at the front this time, Rolotsi, and Nick has to go last this time.
Yeah.
Happy insert holiday here. For the fight Urza had in the Tartarus arc that she won because she's Urza, do you guys think it would have been better if Hero had used the fact that Urza had an artificial eye to be the reason as why she won that fight? I have to remind myself what the Tartarus arc was, because the description Urza, the fight that she won because she's Urza, it was like, well, that could mean anything then. And with Kyoka, the torture demon girl.
Yeah, was it like an eye-based thing kind of though that she did? I thought she just naturally had the ability
to literally beat her. She literally beat her because she believed in herself and friendship.
Well, I knew that, but I'm saying when it came to Kyoka's powers, was it activated via eyesight, like an Aizen sword sort of thing? I thought she just had the ability to control your senses.
I think that's kind of the point, though, is what if instead, you know, she couldn't take away the sight in that eye because it was an artificial eye?
It's still just, it feels like it's too small of like a chip to say to explain it. If it was an eye-based ability, like if she was like, because you've seen my, I don't know, my true face or something like that, then I could control your senses, and she's like, oh, but I only saw half of it, then it'd make more sense, but, otherwise, no. I mean, it's tough to even try to find, like, a way to logically explain how that fight isn't just nonsense. Because it's just...
Well, they also bring up the artificial eye, and it's brought up so little in the series that it feels like it would be contrived anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really have, like, a great solution you can really get to on it, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, you guys have to wear one of Urza's armors. Which one do you choose? And no, you're not allowed to choose her default outfit. It has to be one of her enchanted armors. So I had to look up Urza's armors in order to answer this question, because it's like, who cares? They all get torn off of her anyway. And she just goes back to wearing the samurai one, because that, you know, shows off her boobs. And I would go with the Purgatory Armor one. It's kind of like used as a joke because she keeps on saying how powerful it is, and then it she uses it.
So I'm guessing then that we're not allowed to just use the one that's like her samurai pants and shit. Like it's.
I mean, you could, but you would also have to wear the boob bandages.
I mean, it's not a huge issue on my part. But I assume I couldn't choose that one because it's not one of her armors. But it's not magic. That was the point of it, was that it wasn't magical. It was just as like a pure of a fighting form as possible, because she fought against that one person who kept like countering magic.
But it's not enchanted, so okay.
Yeah, so I assume I can't use that one. If that's the case, I'm like looking through some of the different armors she's worn. I mean, there's a lot, almost all of them are basically like, hey, we're gonna show off some skin in places and things like that. So I'm gonna go with
just
the one.
There's a little bit of a monster aesthetic in this one, which means it'll never show up again because it doesn't have any actual practical purpose outside this one contrived situation.
Yeah. I'll say the robe of Yuan. That one seems, it looks kind of cool. I mean, I'm gonna have some pretty bad slit going on the sides, but hey, you know, I got good legs. I think I can rock them.
Let's see here. Audio issues. We fixed the audio issues. Go to find guests for recommendations that you find yourselves not liking so much, so that we can get a better balance in arguing the series' good points and bad points, because we needed Shaman King and Brusso and on who enjoyed the series. Thank you. I felt it really allowed for a more interesting discussion, allowed for listeners to get a better picture of the recommended series as a whole. I mean, yeah, I think that is definitely beneficial when we talk about those kinds of series. Another point of it is, like, it's just so terrible that we just want to, you know, make a big burn it for an hour kind of thing. You know, I don't think that we would find too many people, for example, willing to defend Aki Sora.
Yeah.
But on ones that seem to be popular outside of our opinion of them, then I do think that there is some benefit to that.
Yeah, there's absolutely a point to the notion of just bringing in a third opinion. It's something that we've done a couple times, maybe not as frequently as we should, but for example, whenever we're doing like a romance series. I don't want to pigeonhole. We brought Annalise on several times in discussing series like, the My Boyfriend one or whatever that one was, the one that was the first Yaoi read. My favorite. And then also like when it was like Snow White and the Red Hair. These are series that I think had we not had her on, the conversation regarding the series would have been a lot more just like, neither of us really got it. It wasn't that interesting sort of thing. Like, for those, there's a knowledge that comes in like, hey, we're probably not going to be the best people to talk about this. I still think there's a point to having our thoughts on it, but let's get somebody who's going to have a little bit more of an invested stake in this to share their thoughts so that people who are genuinely curious have a better picture of what they're going in for. So there absolutely is that, but, it's difficult to do that for every series because, one, we don't always know what all the people we have as possible guests have read and things like that. And then, as you said, there's some series where you're just like, I don't know if we're going to find somebody who's really going to be like, hold on, let me tell you guys about the good points of the Spider-Man manga. It's like,
okay, you guys don't understand. The Ruby manga is brilliant.
I feel like I had Brennan is a good friend of ours. He is a huge fan of Ruby, and even he was like, the Ruby manga's hot garbage. So, I mean, I don't know.
Good to know, at least.
Yeah.
And finally, speaking of co-hosts, when will you guys force Annalise and Tekking 101 to fight to the death for your non-existent coveted position of co-co-host?
I don't know. You know what?
I don't know. We'll have to plan that out. We'll have to make sure there's no scheduling conflicts.
Yeah. I like to think that one day Weekly Manga Recap reaches that point where one of us leaves the show, so the remaining person is essentially like who's the chick that's on there right now? I think it's not Kelly Lee. That was the old show, Regis and Kelly Lee, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's the person who's on there now it was Kathy Lee back in the day. Now it's just Kelly. And after Michael Strahan left, she just had like a week of auditioning various other people to like fill in that spot. So it's like one week, it's like, you know, like, hey, it's, Mario Lopez. And the next day, it's like, oh, hey, look, it's Jai Courtney or something like that. I don't know, just random people. That's what we should do is just, like, it's just this long, like, assortment of various episodes with one different person on as the guest, and that's how we determine it. Be a crazy time.
All right, we got another email from Blazer.
Yes, Blazers are here. Dear Nick Rule Nick, or why Rule Nick time when you can Rolo with Chris T? Interesting one.
Why Rule Nick time when you can... Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. If you guys create a series based around all the wacky voices you do for different characters, which voices would make the five main characters?
Well, there's an interesting addendum to this.
Mm-hmm.
When I say wacky voices, I mean the ones that are based off of impressions of different people, like your Ben Zai impression or Donald Trump impression. So that actually cuts out a lot of the wacky voices we do.
Well, I think, here's the thing. A lot of the wacky voices, at least that I do, are bad impersonation, like bad celebrity impersonation. Like the Madara voice is an Ed Wynn impersonation. Like, oh, hello there, everybody. Oh.
Oh.
Yeah, heavens to Murgatroyd, don't you know? Or, like, oh, it's a Bane voice, you know? Those ones, I guess, qualify. I mean, your Uwabok one is basically a Foghorn Leghorn.
It started off that way.
Yeah, like that's
not
how that
really anymore.
Yeah,
did have like I had the Michael Caine voice for who was it that was for the fucking Sage of Six Paths? What a weird choice of that. I had what's his name? Capone.
Marlon Brando?
Marlon Brando, right. So I guess there's that too.
I guess there's Mark Wahlberg voice for Baron Tamago, things like that.
I mean, that I think that would be essential, yeah.
So, like our five man team, I guess, is like, the Edwin, Madara, the fucking, Baron Tamago, Mark Wahlberg, the Uwabok voice, the Marlon Brando, Capone, and then the last spot has to go to fucking whatever voice it is for Ray, because it's the only one that like both of us just are naturally able to like
he's
pop
like he's like the special like... cameo he's like the special cameo character that shows up at once a season or something.
Yeah,
like
he,
that
he's a six ranger
and the crowd goes hey it's Hashtag Ray and the crowd goes nuts.
Oh my god. Yeah, there we go.
And he's like, I'm mainstream and he leaves.
Yeah, he's like, the thing just jumped a shark. Also, Nick, do your Donald Trump Naruto again sometime. It's hilarious. Actually, why don't you do your Donald Trump impression every time you recap the Boruto manga and other spin-off mangas where Naruto shows up?
Donald Trump impression isn't very funny anymore.
Yeah.
Circumstances considered.
I think that impression got significantly less enjoyable the moment that became the
reality.
The moment
he won the election, I was like, yeah. Wow, now I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
It's also something too, where it is like, you know, it's old hat. It's going to
become too many Donald Trump impressions now. Like, I mean, yeah. It was getting to the point where it was overabundant, and now that he's the president, come on.
Like, they're the ones that you're gonna have. Like, they're gonna have to be after. Like, Saturday Night Live's always gonna do one and things like that. But it's like otherwise, it's like, let's find something else to do. Plus, it wasn't that. It's not as though Naruto was Donald Trump or something like that. It's like fitting that you have to do it.
It was, I think that it was like something that I just had to like improvise. I think the moment
I feel like it was the comedy month we were doing where I had a random impression generator and it came for that.
Can one of us do Donald Trump or something like that? Yeah. Came up.
All right. So thank you for the questions there, Bladeser.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No signature on this one. So this is a bunch of JoJo's questions, Chris. this is a little odd the way that this is worded, because it begins with, how would you rate the parts of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure against each other points? But some of them are just, like, favorite and so on.
Yeah, I think they're just kind of, the individual's looking for, I think they might be looking for maybe rankings between them, but I'm not going to be able to do rankings for all of them. So I'll just kind of comment on these, I guess, as they sort of appear. So like the idea being like, how do you, compare the different JoJos against one another. So,
right. That's the first one.
Yeah. My favorite JoJo is Part 4's, which is Josuke, because in my mind, he combines the badass quality that Jotaro had with the very silly nature that Joseph had in Part 2. It's a really good kind of fusion of both those parts.
Okay.
And then after that is Jolene, because she is a fantastic character, and she's the only JoJo who actually has a character arc. She actually grows as a character through the series.
Wait, they can do that?
Yes, and it's a phenomenal actual story. She's a great character. I really, really hope they get to Part 6 in animation, because that's a part that I feel a lot of people are going to really enjoy getting to experience. It's not one that enough people know about.
Main antagonist. There's a clarification of specifically cars for Part 2.
Which would make sense. He's the final antagonist. I guess the idea of not trying to put in, like, Wham instead of him. Part 4's antagonist is really good. I don't want to say too much because we will get to that one eventually, so I don't want to spoil too much for Nick. But it was a nice kind of... It was an effective way to do a villain without making him too huge, which kind of became a problem later on. Like, after going from Dio, it was nice to get something a little bit more simple, but at the same time menacing and terrifying, and had a really good kind of fight to it. And then after that, it's Dio, I think, is the best one. Yeah.
All right, favorite side character.
Man, I feel like I'm just explaining why I really like Part 4. Okuyasu is my favorite, like, one of my favorite, like, side characters. Just because he's such an idiot. He's so dumb and, like, just bad at things, but he's so likable. He's charming in his things. So I found myself just being so attached to him, by and large. And I guess Part 5's... Bucarati, or I can't remember how to say his name. It's all Italian, which is bad as it is for me, because it's like, hey, I don't have anywhere near the familiarity with this, even Japanese, and I'm bad at that. But Bucarati from Part 5 was great. I liked him better than the JoJo, that part.
Favorite minor villain?
That one's...
I've got a couple of answers for this.
Yeah, you could jump on that one for the moment. I'm trying to think.
Part 3's, first off, Whole Horse.
Oh, yes. Hall Horse is a great answer.
But also Arabia Fats, the guy who used the sun and just drove around in the mirror car to try and cook them in the desert.
Yeah, that's a good one.
He just gets taken out by, like, what, a freaking rock or something like that that JoJo throws at
him. They just toss a rock at him. I'm trying to think. There was a lot of really fun ones in Part 6. Like, I'm about to be like, you know, Part 4 had another really good one. I'm trying not to do that. Part 6 had a lot of really good ones. There's the dude whose stand essentially allowed him to keep, essentially he was committing suicide over and over again because it was what would hurt. It would kill the person he was fighting, essentially. Like, his stand connected them that way. So it was basically, like, a battle of trying to keep this dude from, like, electrocuting himself and shit.
Wow.
That was a pretty fun one. I remember him having
similar to who Jotaro fought in Part 3.
I think it might be this guy. I think it might be Thunder McQueen was his name. Yeah, he's a suicidal prisoner working as a gender. And he links his deaths with, Hermes and tries to kill himself repeatedly. Like, his stand was just like, it was just a way for him to transfer the effects of him committing suicide on someone else. So, like, if he would, like, electrocute himself, he'd transfer that, the electrocution to somebody else. So, it's kind of cool there.
Favorite stand, or in the case of Parts 1 and 2, just power technique.
I'm gonna go Part 6, Jolene's stand was really cool. The ability to, like, turn yourself into string just found so many cool ways to be done in, like, really awesome, like, climactic moments. But, the biggest one, yeah, I kinda had to go to is Bucarati in Part 5. The ability to punch things and make zippers on it sounds so fucking stupid. And the fact that that dude is as badass as he is, you're like, alright, this is pretty dope. Also give a special note to, Diver Down in part 6 and Sweet, which is like the ability to like punch something and like store the impact of it in things and then like send it out later. It was a kind of cool concept for it.
Playing around with kinematics, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty dope.
Or kinetics, not kinematics, kinetics. Favorite fight?
Dio and
only
Joe.
Only one I can,
you know.
One I really know of, yeah. So.
Yeah, Dio and JoJo's great. Wham and Joseph's really good. The Final Fight in Part 4 is excellent. Josuke versus Highway Star. It's not really, I guess, even like a fight per se, but just the notions of what the characters had to do to defeat the underworld in Part 6. It's mind-boggling. It's one of those things where, like, even to describe it, you're just like, this is so absurd and over the top in the different efforts they had to go to beat this thing using powers that don't seem like they'd be helpful in the situation. It's so cool. So I liked him a lot.
And favorite part overall?
It's Part 4. Part 4 is my favorite, followed by Part 6, and then probably, like, 2, 3, and then going on from there. I really like Part 4. It's got a lot of great pieces to it that really work for me. And then Part 6 just is solid and underrated. All right. Thank you for that. Let's move on to a question here from SamFake233. Day 1. I, Dr. Blank, have finally awoken. Prototype Time and Prototype are online, but somehow their first act as duty is to sleep all day. Why? Question 1.
Get tired.
Yeah, I do. I have sleep apnea. It's a problem. Question 1. Ever since Asuka Nock-Lavar appears in Bleach, I've always thought that he was a JoJo character that Kubo somehow made by his looks and personality. Mainly, if somehow Asuka was a JoJo character, which parts in JoJo that you prefer? I guess, where do we think he
fit? I think he means, yeah, where would he fit in best?
Part 2. He suggests Part 2, which I could definitely see. There's a lot of JoJo questions at the start of this. I feel bad for Nick. I'll just say Part 2. We'll move on. Question 2. Before reading, I haven't watched or read Shokugeki no Soma, the little information I know about the series from your podcast. So something within this question doesn't make sense. Just go with it. Blah, 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 blah. I have to say, Nick and Chris, this is a food war. This is no ordinary Shokugeki no Soma, but this is Shokugeki no Soma courtroom edition, and you guys have to present somehow. So the concept being that Yukihira has put Azami on trial for all his actions within Tatsuki. And right. We're the lawyers in this, but we need to choose which side wins.
Quite how that works, but
yeah. So, like, I guess
I think that let's see, are we actually like in charge of this, or
I guess we're
I'm not sure if he says we're presenting or if we are present for it.
I think the idea is being that we're like almost the cosmic gods that are creating this thing, but we're picking all the individual pieces in it. Because I mean,
quite how lawyers work.
Because like the notion being that like, I assume if we're trying to fight for one side, we would just like, I'd be like, all right, so prosecutor, I'm gonna pick like the smartest person who's the most likely to like get the conviction, and for the defense, I don't know, who's the dumbest idiot who can't manage a sentence, and just put that as their defense.
Just put Rindo in as the only witness for the defense.
Yeah, and she's just like, ooh, a steak, and leaves the courtroom, and he's barred afterwards.
Honestly, I think that if you put stuff in a formal courtroom setting, that Azami would actually probably win, just based on how, I mean, come on, like, you're gonna put Soma against Azami and have them go in a battle of reasoning and argument against each other?
I mean, you can use
Soma's kind of an idiot.
I'm trying to think, I'm sure there's an example I'm always saying, so don't get too angry at this, but has Azami actively committed any crimes? Cause he took over Totsuki legally, like he got, they built the Council of Ten to have that kind of power to put him in, and is kind of expelling students has fallen in within the crazy laws of how Tatsuki operates, even though he's more harsh in delivering them than previous iterations have been. I mean, maybe you could definitely say he's been doing some evil shit with Nikiri, like, or Erina, but I don't, is that what he's on trial for?
It's yeah, sure. Hey, if he did it for child abuse, I think that you could definitely, argue for that.
Yeah. But if it's just like,
really make a case of that, that we'd get him in trouble.
But if it's just central, I'd say he'd win because there's no actual crime being broken.
I mean, if you set a precedent for, I mean, let's put it this way. You could probably get him convicted, but if you did, then the entire school would, like, be ended because they've been doing some pretty ridiculous stuff since before he got there. That's just how the school operates. And schools do have a lot of leeway on who they can expel. Set a precedent for, you didn't follow the curriculum and so you expelled them. I think that you would definitely get to the previous, you'd probably get to send them on in trouble too.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for the questions there.
Okay, this is from Satellite of Love, a ruler of somebody, and don't go chasing Rolotes.
That was the saddest acoustic like remix of Waterfalls that I've ever heard.
I don't care. I like that song. So,
is that the version of Somebody too? Because in my mind, I'm reading it like
I don't know.
I'm thinking of it like Kings of Leon, like my ruler of somebody. You know.
I guess it could be.
I guess there's a lot of songs
that have somebody.
Yeah. Oh, or it's like something something like I always feel like my ruler of time, somebody's watching me. I've already identified who it is, so it kind of destroys the mystery.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Osamu and Kitara are about to go on their first date. And it's up to Osamu to plan their day together. Unfortunately, Osamu has no clue what to do because he's Osamu. The good news is, Gremmy has appeared and is offering to help Osamu put on the perfect date. What would Gremmy do to help Osamu and Kitara have a good time?
Well, recognizing the very limited intelligence of the brain in the jar, I imagine he'd almost go with like the most stereotypical date ever where he'd be like, oh, well, there'll
be a... go to dinner. Then you will see a romantic comedy movie.
Yeah. Then you will afterwards perhaps have ice cream and or coffee. If things are successful, maybe sex, ... question mark, question mark, question mark. It's just like... And you know what? Even though that is the most, like, boring, stereotypical kind of thing on a date and movies are an awful thing to do on a date, I still feel like it's like not that bad. Like, I feel like Osamu's just so pure and it, like, he's not gonna win you over, I guess, with the creativity of a date. I feel like that's just not the way he's, like, wins your affection.
No, he would win you over by being a hard worker. And an honest person.
Yeah.
It would probably work out and Kitara would use her knife foot to cut through Grammy's brain after getting annoyed with all of his stupid date ideas. And then she would, like, I don't know, hold hands with Osamu as he walked her home or some shit.
Yeah, there we go. She gets really hot.
Or if you read Chris's fan fiction, then they have sex while she wears all these socks, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, in my version, she has sex with Osamu right after killing Grammy because she's really hot and bothered by murdering a brain in a jar. And she's like, I've never felt that before. I want you in me now. All right. Let's get questions here from Shockwave. Dear Nick and Chris, the two guys that find a way to piss my girlfriend off more than I do. Well, you're welcome.
Yeah.
I don't have any more creative nicknames, but I have important news I need the world to know. I've managed to get my hands on the audit of Tatsuki Culinary Institute and discovered four things. They classified themselves as a religion, so they don't pay taxes. That would make sense. The profits they make up of food only make up 40% of their total income. The royalties they get for all that food on the campus is about 30%, and the remaining 30% comes from an outside donor. Oh, you're making a joke then about the single donor being Junior from Ruby.
Fuck that is.
Yeah. I keep forgetting that we made like a big deal about Junior from Ruby being like a big deal. Cause I've like so, like, dislodged.
Oh, great. God. The guy that Yang fought, right?
Yeah, who like showed up in the character introductions the next week. Which, like, still shows up on. He's a huge character, so why did Junior make that? I don't know why, like, it's just been dislodged from my mind, because I've just forgotten about the fucking Ruby manga
what
so much.
What happened in the Ruby manga again?
Yeah. Anyway, the question's here. Since it takes 25 years for a musician to get a nomination into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and since JoJo's over a time limit not in the hall, What volume would you use to present a case to put into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
That's an interesting idea.
I'm trying to think what would be the most musically influenced part. I guess maybe part two? I know there's a bunch of stances there. Like, I'm trying to think, like, what's the most rock and roll part? And I guess it's probably part two, then? Yeah, I'll go with part two. I'll go with that.
Mm.
It's time for a financial three-way battle between Tony Stark, Lex Luger, and Seto Kaiba.
Luger? Oh, he's going to use the total package.
He's got everything. Lex Luthor and Seto Kaiba.
Grab him immediately.
There are a few rules. They're given $100 to start. They aren't allowed any of their own assets. They're completely on their own. And no power suits, just bully their way out of it. Who makes the most money in that month's time?
It's Tony Stark versus Lex Luthor versus Seto Kaiba. All they've got is $100.
Yes, and who makes the money in the most time? In that month's time, rather.
I would probably do something stupid, like he would immediately try to gamble with it in order to, you know, just play games with people and beat them and take their money. You know, he'd play chess. Once he got enough money, he would build it. He would, duel monsters, I should say. Tony would probably try and invent something, obviously. But I'm not going to say exactly how he does it, but I'm pretty sure that Lex would win.
Yeah, I mean, my mind goes
the reason
Lex.
I say that is because Tony and Kaiba got their money by getting money from someone else, whereas Lex Luthor is a self-made man.
And Lex Luthor kind of is actively always pursuing, like, advancement. Like, Tony kind of uses his money to make Iron Man and to make shit. Like, the money's just a resource. And Seto Kaiba is, like, he got money and built a giant fucking rocket, like, plane shaped like a blue-eyed white dragon. So clearly he's not, like, smart with his money. So I feel like Lex Luthor just has that drive to get more and is going to go for that. Whereas, like, Tony Stark, in my mind, would be like, hey, why don't I do something crazy with this $100 and see where that goes? And Kaiba, in my mind, is like, I'm going to spend this $100 to buy Yu-Gi-Oh cards and then use those cards to win dual monsters tournaments and get more money.
He's like, by the end of the month, he's like, I've opened like 500 booster packs and I haven't found any blue eyes white dragons. It's because there's only three in the world.
What a fool I've been.
Why do I keep on finding all this blue eyes white dragon support, though? Why do they keep printing this if there's only three of these dragons? Okay, this thing comes from Kenneth Arnes. Dear, goddamn it, Nick, Rube, why ruler of time to get alive? Because I'm a talentless chode, Freeman.
Okay.
And Chris, shut your filthy cum-guzzling whore mouths. Monty Home is godlarious.
It's fair enough.
Jesus Christ. This only gets worse. Number one, are you glad that you didn't bash Yatsubato lest he incur the wrath of the vengeful doxing 4chaners? I feel like even if we did, that we're probably beneath their notice, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess number yes. Two, I guess yes, then, to the end of the question.
Yeah. I mean, it would suck to get doxed. Number two, if Azumanga Daioh and Yatsubato had a special crossover one-shot together, which member of the Yatsudai cast would make for the best and worst babysitters for Yatsuba? You say that as if I know a lot about Azumanga.
Yeah, I was like, did we bring this up at some point? Are we supposed to know what Azumanga Daioh? I know the name, but I couldn't tell you anything about it.
I'm familiar with a few of the characters, but it's not, like, deeply. And I watched maybe one or two episodes of the anime, but I haven't. Number three, for Nick, since you loved Yatsubato, despite sharing the same views as Bennett the Sage regarding the diabetes-inducing Ultra Kawaii host club were to appear in it full-time, would you grab as many volumes from as many different bookstores as you can, realities be damned, and throw them all to a giant bonfire, a la the great Cleveland disco riots of 1979? No? I just wouldn't read it.
Yeah, I think it would just turn you off from reading it. You wouldn't want to get more money or they'd make more.
Speaking of disgusted, How disgusted would you be if you found Rule 34 Picks of Yotsuba?
Look, I recognize it exists. Like
it does.
I recognize that anything that I feel like is too innocent that, like, should be completely avoided. Like, here's the fact. I recognize that somewhere out there, there's Rugrats porn. Rugrats is my childhood. They were all babies. Somewhere out there, there's porn of it. I'm not looking for it, but I recognize it's there. And I'm just, I've accepted this part of my life. I'm like, it's there. Let, you know what? I can't do anything about it. I will just live with that knowledge and not push any more on it.
Yeah, I mean, like, even if I came across it, I mean, it'd be a little bit, you know, be like, oh, well, I'm not going to think about sex for the next, you know. But I've also been on the internet for long enough that a lot of that kind of stuff doesn't really get to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's, yep, someone did porn of it. Okay, whatever. Also, there is stuff about asking about a particular artist. It was like, whatever. Unless you do something that is really creatively, shockingly horrifying, then it's not going to bother me anymore. When traveling at a subsonic speed during the last hour of hypersleep, which vector of the Romulan Nebula will suffer the wrath of the impenetrable quickening? For a bonus no prize, how many wraths to the nearest molten?
I'm assuming.
What do you mean, African? What do you mean, African or European swallow? Okay.
Let's see, I feel like this is like a meme from Star Trek that I'm not getting.
It's an actual question that just has a lot of weird like space travel terms in it.
Gotcha. All right, question here from Jack Lebrano. Dear Freeman, the King of the King of Games, and Chris Larios, the Hearthstone reference. Thank you. Although it had been a bit more satisfying ending than Bleach, I still believe Toriko is only second in terms of ending the series with at least a million things left to explain. Like, what happened to the rest of Biotope Zero, how Zebra got the mouth scar, what happened to the astronaut chef of Neo, and quite possibly the biggest one that I'm surprised no one has brought up is the bit fucked up that Toriko technically married his foster sister since she and Sunny are blood siblings.
I mean, it's a manga, so... That kind of, like, we're almost family kind of thing can be treated as weird, or it can be treated as, like, oh, we've known each other our whole lives, we just never realized we felt about each other this way, you know.
Well, it's not as though, like, Toriko and Sunny didn't, like, live together their entire lives. Like, it's, there was eventually a point where they split off. It sounds like he didn't live all the time with, Rin around, so I guess it just doesn't connect that way. But if you could somehow fix Toriko in a way that that one of those unanswered questions would be answered, which one would it be? So if we could answer any question from Toriko that was kind of left open, what one would we want? And, I'm going to just say we take off the table. Why are there guns in space? Why are there giant guns some reason in space? We'll just say that one. It's off the table. You don't need to worry about it.
I think I'd go with the zebra mouse scar, honestly. Zebra backstory, I would take. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a really interesting one. I would really like to know what happened with, I can't remember if his name was Zahn or Zaus, but the chef who was ranked number one in the world. Like, I feel like we never really got a good conclusion to that dude or anything he was about. There was so much to kind of get back to with that, and just, we never really did. He's a bad guy, then he was not super a bad guy, and then it was a series done.
Also seeing their, ascend to become the new kings of the animals. That'd be cool.
That would be cool. Alright, well, thank you very much there, Jack.
Alright. So, come on. Yahoo. Alright, more questions from Kenny Varnes here. Chief Nick, Y, leader of the Space Knights Von Freeman, and Chris Tekkaman Rollo, it's a stretch, but still a better name than Tekkaman Dead, or, if you go by the original version in the English dub, Technoman Slade, Larios.
What the fuck are you talking about? Technoman Slade is awesome! That name sounds so cool! The name Slade is always
Technoman
awesome!
Slade.
I still maintain Slade in the Teen Titans iteration is still my favorite villain ever portrayed in a piece of media. That dude was so awesome.
I always loved the way that Robin would say his name, you know, just Slade. Slade. Yeah, I hate you, Slade. Hello, Robin. There's a weird kind of file thing going on between us, but it's totally not.
Yeah. We got away from that really weird, very uncomfortable thing that I'm supposed to have with Tara from the comics by just being like, hey, I don't know. I'm just creepy around children in general, I guess.
I'm just creepy around teenagers in general. Tara, Robin, Raven, all of them. 100% of the time. I'm voiced by Ron Perlman.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's fine, though. It's Ron Perlman's behind me.
Anyway, have you ever watched Techaman Blade or Technoman, the form being one of the most underrated anime classics in the 90s and a fine example of how not all darker and edgier reboots of beloved franchises are total dumpster fires, the latter being the bastardized dub of said show, where D-Boy won't stop spewing cringe-inducing puns every fight. The show, because it was unfortunate, you probably, it says, show, because it was unfortunate to air on UPN of all networks every Saturday morning. And we all know how much you 90s kids don't give a flying fuck about UPN, or even ABC for that matter, even though ABC had good tunes. Fuck you, suck my dick. Yeah, ABC did have good cartoons. What are you fucking talking about? Darkwing Duck? ABC, what's that or more? Yeah.
I mean, I
argue that point.
I will. I mean, when I was watching Saturday morning cartoons, it was Kids WB or Fox. Those are like the two that you went with. Like, I know Disney, ABC had something they did, but anytime I ever heard of the shows they were on, I was like, that just sounds awful. Why would I want to watch those? Like, it was like the new Doug or, you know, things like House of Mouse or something like that. I'm like, these sound so boring. I don't want to watch these. They have cool fighting shows and everything else.
I'm not saying that all of them were good, but, yeah.
And I never even, maybe I had some knowledge of it, but I feel like I didn't even register UPN as having like a Saturday morning block.
I know they did. I could not tell you a single show that was on it, even though you just told me one that was on it. No, I have no recollection of it. Number two, if you weren't being threatened with eternal damnation for believing in a different god in our puritanical American society, the Asian religion would you convert to on the assumption that their gods look much cooler and more badass than our standard bearded god that we're all familiar with? Mahayana Buddhism. If we're going strictly on the basis of the coolest looking gods, I think I'd go with Hindu. I think if something, in terms of something that actually lines up with my actual beliefs better, I'd go with Buddhism.
Saying different than our standard bearded gods. So let's say that would just also encompass like Norse, Greek, Roman, that kind of stuff. Could I?
No, specifically, it's specifically choosing between Hinduism and Buddhism.
Oh, between the two of them?
Yeah.
I guess Hinduism, they got some kind of cool characters. I'm about to be really, fucking insensitive, I feel like, to a religion that's still being actively practiced today. But the Hindu gods in Smite were pretty dope. Like, there were some cool looking gods in that. I had a lot of fun playing Kumbhakarna. He's like a really big fat dude who, puts people on the ground with his one attack. It's pretty fun. Makes you fall asleep and shit. It's real dope.
Anyway, name your top five Shonen Jump villains, past or present. That's...
Well, here's the thing. Right after that, there's a follow-up question that says, top 10 Shonen Jump villains bonus podcast when? And I will tell you that
that's a good idea.
It's one I've actively had that I want to do, but it's one that I'm also kind of holding on to because I really want to get a better... catalog that I know, have knowledge of before I do it, because it's one that I have a lot of passion for, and I feel like I haven't read enough, or there's too many of those characters that just aren't fresh in my head. So I'm not going to name any of those, because there's ones I'd rather save for on that list, but just to give you like a couple examples of ones I think are really good, it'd be like Aegon from Eyeshield 21, a lot of the ones. I know that you're like, what the fuck?
It's that's the first one you go to.
No, I legitimately think Aegon is one of the best.
The arrogant football player.
But that's the thing. He was effective.
I totally agree. That's the thing. I totally agree with you, but it's just such a weird one to
go. I know it's so weird to jump through, but it's like no other one does what I think what a villain should do. Like when you think of that thing in wrestling, when it's like what a heel should be versus the cool heel, a heel should make you want to root for the hero because you just hate them that much. And that was what Aegon did for me. I hated everything he did, and I rooted for every member of the Devil Bats, and once they all got their, like, subsequent comeuppance on him, it was so satisfying. So he fits that for me. I know he's not the first answer people would think of, but that's one of the big examples I'd give. All right, fuck you. Zabuza, then, all right? You need a traditional goddamn answer here.
Next one. What are your favorite moments? This is actually a very specific one. What are your favorite moments when someone's disguise is so painfully obvious that the instant that they present themselves, nobody falls for it? Monza from Samurai Champloo, infiltrating the American Navy, while saying the immortal line, "Yes, I'm an American Yankee Doodle."
I mean, does, like, the ones in One Piece count, where they were, like, just fucking, like, shitty mustache-beard combos?
I think that Lucy is one of my favorite disguises ever, because it is actually effective on some people, even though it's just Luffy wearing a gladiator helmet and a fake beard.
Yeah.
And then, you know, insisting, like, "I'm not Luffy, I'm Lucy." What are your favorite moments where the obvious is stated to great effect, such as Bao has a laser cannon? That's another very specific one, honestly.
I'm trying to think of, like, good examples of that. There's, like, the old classic JoJo one, which is, like, Speedwagon being shocked. He's, like, screaming, like, "Ah!" And then there's, like, a narration from Jonathan that's like, "Even Speedwagon is afraid." It's like, well, no shit. He's screaming. Man, there's so many. I feel like it's tough to remember them, though, but I'm sure if we've, like, brought them up on the episodes themselves, when characters are just fucking stating the obvious.
Yeah. And then there's, is Strawberry Clock the king of the portal? Strawberry Clock. Is B the greatest Flash movie ever?
I have no idea about any of those.
So this is referencing some sort of, you know, Flash animation onto something that I have never seen.
There we go. I thought they were talking about Flash, the comic book character.
Literally, it didn't occur to me until the second time that I saw it. Like, wait a minute, this is a sub thing to a Strawberry Clock, which I do remember being referenced and stuff.
True. All right. Questions here from Knopf. Dear Y, insert clever name joke here, and Rollo, coming up with one would take more time than my actual question, so screw it. There's a spin-off manga for Magi that focuses on Sinbad's past exploits when he was the shonen main character aged. Would you two like to see a similar Black Clover spin-off following Yami's journey to captain of the Black Bulls? And if so, do you think you'd enjoy it more than the main series proper?
Not really. I don't actually care about you. I don't really care for Yami all that much the more he shows up, I'll admit.
I mean, I like Yami, but it's, I think part of the thing was, like, seeing Sinbad's past exploits was Sinbad was somewhat of a kind of mysterious character to a certain extent, and there were some moments of very moral ambiguity to him, so seeing his history kind of provided a lot of new insight. I feel like I might, like, the Black Clover Yami manga would just be Black Clover now, but with Yami as the lead, which probably would be more entertaining. But it's not like you're getting anything that different. Like, it's not as though my enjoyment of the Black Clover universe would increase exponentially just because I read, you know, Yami beats a bunch of people over time.
Mm-hmm.
And side note, did you know that the mangaka of Magi is a woman? I did not.
Yes.
And are there any manga that you have read that you were surprised to find were written / drawn by a woman or vice versa?
I don't know what vice versa means.
Written or drawn by, like, I guess that's what they mean. Like, written by a woman or drawn by a woman, vice versa. I guess the only one, it's like the Full Metal Alchemist is the one I guess was kind of, like, the most surprising. If only because that was at a time when I didn't recognize, like, the creators of series the same way you do now.
Right, right.
Like, you didn't normally address the person attached to a project the same way we kind of have grown to do now. So it was just like, hey, it's another Shonen Battle series. It's like, oh, well, this one was made by a woman. Like, oh, it's pretty interesting.
Would probably seem obvious now, or even when I was, like, a teenager, but way back when I first, Ranma and Inuyasha's creator being, you know, Rumiko Takahashi. I was like, I mean, you know, this was when I was way younger. I actually remember how I reacted when I learned that Fullmetal Alchemist was drawn by, you know, Arakawa. I literally don't remember it. I feel like I would have been surprised, but I do not remember what my reaction was. Looking up some more, you know, like shonen manga that have female creators. One of the ones that I was surprised to see in the list was actually Dead Man Wonderland, which doesn't seem like it would have been written by a woman, honestly.
Yeah, actually, if you say that.
With all the weird fan service in it.
It's
so.
Sort of a weird one.
It is apparently drawn by a guy, though, I think.
All right, then.
Interesting stuff, though.
Okay. Is this me, or is this you?
This is my question. Okay. X3I. Hey guys, Ninja X3I here. Fucking load the fucking email. There's a lot of questions here, so I'm going to try and skip the preamble on a lot of them.
I guess the notion is just that Ninja started listening to the podcast, and there's a bulk option on the app they use, so they re-downloaded our whole catalog and have been going through it. So that's what I think kind of inspired a lot of these questions.
So these are stuff from someone who has been marathoning us, basically.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
From the beginning, even considering that most of the series are really long, the first episode somewhat surprised me with how late into most of the regular series it was when you started covering them. So, which parts of the manga were you talking about at the time? Which parts of the manga that you were talking about at the time? Naruto, Bleach, Bakuman, Toriko, Fairy Tail, Hajime no Ippo, Beelzebub, and Kenichi. Do you wish that you've been able to cover as they were coming out week to week? Okay.
Well, I don't want to go through all of them because I don't think there's many that I feel so, but I really, really wish we had been talking about One Piece when it was during the Marineford arc. Because that arc was so huge and exciting, and there were so many, like, just enormous chapters. The chapter with Whitebeard revealing his powers, Ace getting killed, Blackbeard showing up, the various different moments when characters were fighting each other that were like these huge, big, like, characters within the One Piece universe, the scale of it. Like, there was a lot to talk about and digest, and that was at a time where we just didn't do the show. So that's when I think would be really fun to have been able to, like, cover it in, like, a show format kind of moment.
To go over some of them, I don't think the Bleach, honestly, I care too much about Bleach or Fairy Tail because there's no moments that really stick out. I do our last arc of Bleach on Weekly Manga Recap, and I don't feel like did too much that we missed some of it. Same for Naruto, honestly. Like, Naruto is, like, I don't think that there's any particular point that I really wish we could have talked about. I guess way back when it was insanely good, but that was a long time ago. But certain fights stand out.
Yeah.
So.
I'm thinking maybe with Fairy Tail, it might have been fun to have been talking about it when they were doing the Magic Festival arc, if only to, like, be able to express my rage over that arc as it happened, where I'm just like, man, this has been bad.
What do you mean he just surrenders to them?
Or it gets to that point. Oh, I'd have lost my... You thought me talking about fucking Sasuke's magic eye bullshit was bad? I would have lost my shit if I got to the chapter where it's like, oh, well, he couldn't actually have act... Like, it turns out he's not actually a bad dude at all. Lux is really... cares about everyone in the guild deep down. It's like, bullshit! Motherfucker had a bomb about to go off on everybody! That motherfucker was evil! He's still evil!
Oh my god, I would have loved to have gotten it just at so many points during the frickin' tournament arc.
God, so many.
My future Lucy! Question 2. You're having a third host, whether as just a third host or a permanent stand-in for whenever either you guys would be unavailable. So essentially like a standby substitute. Mm-hmm. And who would you want to be this third host?
That's a tough question. We've had
it
a
is.
we've had a lot of people.
It's not something
on the
we
show.
Can really just answer. It's not really something you can answer just immediately.
Yeah. We've had a lot of people who have been regular guests on the show that have been, you know, that are awesome. I don't think we've ever had anyone on the show who I've been like, well, we're never having that person back on again or anything like that. So almost anybody who's been on the show, I'd love to have back on. I mean, we have Annalise on, I guess, probably the most regularly of anybody mm-hmm. on there. But I, yeah, it's a tough question to really say because we have a lot of really great, people who appear on the show and mm-hmm. I think all of them would be great to have on. I'd love to have the ability to control space time and make it so that they all have free schedules and we have this crazy, like, 17 person weekly manga recap every week. And remember, because I control space time, even though it's like a 17 hour long podcast, you still get the effects of it in like 20 minutes or something like that. You know, it's
you're okay. like actually simultaneously experiencing individual one on one conversations.
Exactly.
All at once.
It's like this fifth dimension kind of podcast at that point.
So this is one that comes from the observation that, you know, until late 2013, starting with Shut Hell, you would give your recommended series at most 2 weeks and usually only one for you to read them. So that's led to being unable to fully finish a series before reviewing it. What I'd like to make clear that this wasn't much of an issue for making the manga discussions good, but there are series like Usagi Drop and Kamikaze Kaito Jean where stopping at certain points would have given a drastically different review of the series. Of course, ending on, you know, oh, well, I guess we'll get married, and Kaito Jean with the rape issues that I brought up that you had not read. not finishing series like The World God Only Knows and Majin Tate no Gami Neru could lead to not being able to fully mutually discuss parts of the series. So, of the series that you could not fully finish before reviewing them, which do you most regret not being able to finish in time?
I remember regarding not being able to finish Tower of God, and I think that was one of the few that people were really upset with us that we weren't able to get very far into. Because I enjoyed Tower of God. I thought it was fun. It was just a long sort of series, and a lot of people thought we hadn't even gotten to where it was, like, it really started to take off. So I wish I had been able to get through more of that.
I mean, I'm going to say the same thing just because I liked reading it so much that I wish that I had read more of it before we discussed it, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Similar to but different to the above one, there are some that you've done for the show that were relatively new when you did them, or you read everything that was available, but they were still ongoing. You know, stuff like Attack on Titan, Assassination Classroom, Love So Life. So of these types of series, with the benefit of hindsight of knowing when they'd actually finish, which ones do you wish you had done as a recommendation at a later point so as to get a more complete look at the series?
So this is an interesting question because I get the notion that is being presented here of the idea of if we had known when a series would end, if we held off on discussing it so we could get a fuller picture of it. But I also think that there's this very important note that sometimes these recommendations, even though they're done for series that are very short, it's those short ones also have their own kind of point to them because we are discussing them almost as they are relevant to the culture of manga or anime or whatever at the time. Like, we did My Hero Academy when it was, like, 25 chapters or so in or something like that.
Quite new, but very popular, yeah.
And it was a way for us to talk and kind of go through, like, hey, what is this new series that people are talking about? Is this worth reading, et cetera, before it was something that got picked up in the regular Jump and became something we were reading week to week. I mean, that's something where it could have been, we just didn't, like, we were like, oh, hey, it's going to get picked up by Jump in, like, 6 months or whatever. We'd be like, yeah, let's just not read it, and then we'll just catch up when the series comes out. There's a value to discussing it even when it was that kind of young of a series because it has a value on what it's like to read a series even if it's just that short period of it. But, like, in the notion of which ones I guess we'd have held off on, I don't really know because Assassination Classroom, I kind of mentioned during it, like, it's a series I feel like is lessened the more you read of it at once. So I don't know if, like, being able to have read the whole thing would have changed my opinion on it that much of a drastic measure.
I think I'll go for the Assassination Classroom because I think that was roughly half finished or maybe less when we read it. So I feel like we missed out on a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Spirit Circle, because there were, like, just a few months left before it would have been finished, and it feels like a ways that we just got so close to the end and then stopped before discussing it. Because, I mean, we didn't really have any idea of knowing when it was going to finish at the time. I was like, we could have discussed the whole thing. Question 5. If you had a time machine, but the only thing that it allowed you to do was to go back to when you first started WMR and implant one idea from the show's current form into the past you, Weekly Monger Recap lives.
Yeah, that's a fun one to do. I guess I also wish I'd, like, gone back to be like, hey, like, you know, like, as soon as Patreon was an option, like, start that up because it's enabled us to do a lot of other things for the show. I guess also, like, go back in time and be like, hey, get a better mic. This is garbage. Get one that's not garbage.
It's worth it. It is completely worth the investment, yeah.
So, yeah, go back and do that. Also, stop 9/11. I'm like, this happened way before. But all of this is way after 9/11. 2011 Christopher can't stop 9/11 any more than 2017 Christopher can.
All right. During the One Punch Man review and a few scattered times afterward, Chris has mentioned that he felt the best quality about the series was his art, and that if it didn't have the art, it would not be as interesting a series. So have you ever considered reading the webcomic version of One Punch Man to test your theory of how interesting the series would be without Murata's art?
Yeah, I mean, I've considered it. It's just, like, never anything that somebody's been like, hey, you could read it right here, and I've said, like, okay, and done it, essentially, you know?
And also, there's a recommendation for Mob Psycho 100, which was the author's other web series hit. Uh-huh. What, in your opinion, makes something too much in terms of manga? For an example, what makes a sword made of poison ridiculous, but an umbrella or car made of poison stupid?
So the idea of being a sword of poison being ridiculously awesome, but a car umbrella made of it being ridiculous. The thing is that, and this is a reference to Toriko and Coco, the sword of poison was presented and made to be cool. The umbrella or the car are made to be kind of silly jokes. And looking back at the time, we probably were taking Toriko too seriously, which is why those ones felt so awful at the time. But it is the notion that, like, one is something that you would put in to be like, oh, that's a really cool idea. And the other one is just like, what's the limits to, like, why is the kind of the question you first ask when you see it? I guess it kind of just depends on, like, what the execution of them is and what the purpose is.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. There have been some series like Fruits Basket and Yatsubatsu where you mentioned that reading the series would have been better if you did it slowly in chunks or week to week rather than doing it all at once. But flip this on its head. For the main series you have covered on a week to week basis throughout WMR, do you feel that reading those series in bulk has or would have had a different feel to it to any significant degree? For some, people argue a lot that Bleach is better if you don't read it week to week, but if you read it all at once. And I think that there's definitely some to that argument. Some parts of Naruto also, I think, are better if you read them in chunks rather than week to week as well. It really has to do with just kind of the way in general that stuff is constructed. And yeah, I definitely do agree that there are some that are stronger week to week and some that are stronger all the way through. How much content that there is to analyze in each chapter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think maybe One Piece is the one I kind of go to. I think there are points where I wonder if because I feel like I've enjoyed One Piece less since we've started doing the podcast. Not to say I dislike it, but I don't enjoy it to that same, like, fanboy level I used to. And I wonder at times if part of it isn't because I'm reading it now and analyzing it very much in a week-to-week basis, whereas before, you know, I'd be reading them in chunks. So I do wonder if, like, say, Dressrosa might be more of, like, a standout, awesome arc if I read it all at once, as opposed to how we did it week-to-week, where maybe the build-up never got as high as it would if I just read it once and get the full culmination.
Mm-hmm. With Barrage having cut off too soon, Cross managed to stick around a bit, but eventually ending while getting to resolve nicely. Stealth Symphony going out with a bang, and World Trigger being depressingly close to possibly never returning from its definite hiatus. How many more ways can Weekly Shonen Jump kill off the series you guys really start to like?
I guess they just, like, actively murder the mangaka at this point. Like,
that's what they're trying to do!
Yeah.
More serious extension of the question of the series that have started and ended during the manga recaps run, which do you think was the best?
Either
Gakuhotei or Cross Managed for me.
Yeah, I think I say Gakuhōtei. I love Crossmage too, and it's definitely like right up there with it. But I think the potential of Gakuhōtei combined with just how limited of a run it got is the one where I'm just like, man, there was so much more to do with that, and just we didn't get to experience any of it, which is a huge bummer.
Yeah. What was that one with the boob missiles?
Yeah, E-Robot or whatever.
E-Robot. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Okay. What do you think is the significance of the D characters in the Will of D?
In regards to One Piece, I don't actually know. I've not been able to come up with an answer to this one, because the characters that have had D in their names and have the Will and D with them have been a very eclectic group of individuals. Like, there's some, like, Luffy and Ace and things like that, where you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then it's like, oh, yeah, remember Saul the Giant from Robin's flashback? He was also a D. And it's like, huh, so the notion even being that, like, they're all going to be hugely significant living characters that are going to band together at some point to fight off great evil or something, like they're Dragon Slayers or something, that doesn't hold as much water. Like, the Ds are kind of all over the place to the point where you're just like, I don't know, actually.
I'm honestly, same for me. Really no clue. Do you have a favorite moment of Weekly Manga Recap? Some of the ones I always think fondly of include both of your opening statements on the second half of Usagi Drop, Nick's Spider-Man anger, Gantz isn't shonen. Oh man, that's an old one. And, you know, do you really love me? Or are you just insane? Your diary.
There are a lot of good ones. I don't know. It's tough to say. I'm not good at, like, picking what my favorite ones of, like, things we've done in our self are, you know?
If I had to choose, if I have to be, like, self and choose one of my own things, it's either the Spider-Man one or the I'm super tired future diary rant. I listed talking points, and one of them was like a positive talking point. I was like, wait, that's actually a good thing. Anyway.
Yeah, it was like numbers kept getting repeated at points, or like it's the same thing would be brought up again, or you're like, wait, that's a good point. And hold on. It was such a great combination of like pure rage and then like innocent human mistakes that just made it like so funny.
You just kind of like sat back and let me ramble.
Yeah, I was like, man, Nick Riley's going to take the lead on this one. Sweet.
Of the series that you have chosen to be your top recommendation of the year, which would you consider your all-time favorite so far? And as a bit of a reminder, there's our favorites chosen at the end of each year here.
I don't know. Like, I'm looking over the list that's given to me, and there are some really good ones that were picked. If I'm going to say my all-time, like, part of me wants to take either 20th Century Boys or Monster, but I feel like this shouldn't count because I read them prior to Weekly Manga Recap, so I feel like those are kind of cheating. I you know what? I'll say Good Ending is on there, because that's one that was a pure recommendation that someone gave to us. Either Good Ending or Vinland Saga, because it was legitimately just like two series. That's the Holy Land's on there. You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go Good Ending. Fuck those other two. It was a series that was a complete recommendation to us, and I found, you know, extremely entertaining and really enjoyed. And I thought, like, hey, I think that's what the recommendations are partially for, is to help us discover really good manga that we otherwise wouldn't.
Jidensetsu was a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
A good ending, yeah. Nanatakaru.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Honey Master Kurosawa, God, all these are so good. Like, if I had to choose one that is that it's probably Teppu, though.
Teppu was very good. So.
And one final question. With 5 full years and 2 partial years of Weekly Manga Recap to choose from, in each of the following aspects, which year do you feel was the best? Recommendation quality, in terms of series quality and the quality of your discussions. I'd have to look at the fucking list of all the goddamn things that we did.
Yeah, the issue is...
I think 2013, just off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. Quality of series covered week to week on Weekly Manga Recap. Like, I can't even remember stuff that happens at the start of each year when we get to the end. You can't ask me to ask what was happening in each year, each series.
I'd say, in regards to that, it's been getting progressively better and better. Because something that, you know, is part of WMR that we've noticed is that we've been having less series that we get angry about as time goes on, like since Naruto ended, Bleach, things like that, like, and more series have come in that we just legitimately enjoy. I think that's something that's kind of happened more frequently. We get more enjoyable chapters and things like that.
And the most significant for Weekly Manga Recap itself, probably either when we just first started it or when we started Patreon and started doing bonus stuff.
Yeah, I would say probably last year. Last year was the year we started doing the Patreon, but last year was the first full year of doing it, and a lot of stuff kind of came out of it since then. Mm-hmm. I think that's, I can't remember. I feel like last year was also the year we did more theme months. We had like the comedy month in there and that whole month devoted to Bleach with Tekking and.
Yeah. That's a good point, because that was our first full year of doing commentary and doing bonus episodes. Mm-hmm. So. Okay.
All right.
It's a long one.
Yes. Thank you very much for that. Questions here from Jonah.
You're like one that's just like water wet. Yeah. I have to do the next one after.
I'm like, Nick, how wet's your pussy is all this question asked for? You're like, not very wet. I'm like, thank you. All right, next question. Topical here. No, this is from Jonah Baker Leskowitz. Dear Nick, is this that guy from your One Piece forum again, Ruler of Time? And Chris, I swear if you mention Kurokiba and Alice one more time, I'm going to Canada to kick them in his northern balls, Rollo T. Guess who's back with a brand new track? I mean, questions. First off, hello, and I'm going to guess, May, you were close. To start a depressing note, what are some of the most effective manga deaths you can think of? For example, the death of Hughes in Full Metal Alchemist, the only manga scene that makes me tear up 100% of the time, and after rereading the Marineford arc, I was reminded how absolutely heartbreaking Ace's death was.
Jiro's from Toriko.
That's a good one. Light's dad from Death Note.
To go on the opposite end of the spectrum, Light. That was an effective death for me.
Yeah, it's pretty effective. He's super dead.
Favorite manga death ever.
Jiraiya had a very sad death to him. And, to a certain extent, the way that it was, it kind of closed off its story. I thought Zabuza, the way his death was handled, especially in relation with Haku and what kind of came out of those last bits, were really effective.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, wait, hang on a sec.
Which one?
Sasakibe from Bleach.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was, yeah. Well, I mean, that one, that's like the death of our generation.
No, let me tell you about how great Sasakibe was. He had an awesome bond guy.
He was super cool, banged all these chicks. He was the best, guys. You don't understand.
So energetic and youthful.
So many, like, you know, layers to him, just layers upon layers. At first, you're blown away by his incredible personality, but then afterwards, you're like, wow, there's a really, like, deep dude behind all this. Oh, man, you guys would have loved him. Oh, it's a shame he's dead. Second question, on a lighter note, what was the first time in your life while watching or reading a piece of media that you were able to identify that you were watching or reading a well-written romantic relationship? For example, though they only got together after the series was over, I found the relationship between number 3 and number 4 from Codename Kid Next Door to be hilarious, heartwarming, and adorable.
That is an adorable relationship, honestly. But I had no fucking clue. The first time I knew I was watching or reading a well-written romantic relationship.
Let me work you through my thought process right now, because the notion being like a well-written one, and I feel like for a long period of time, I never really thought of it like that. Like I would say Star Wars, you know, I watched the Star Wars movies as a kid and I'd be like, oh, like I think Han and Leia are really cool. But in my mind, I didn't recognize it as like, well, that's a well-written romantic relationship, because it really only, like that notion only came in once I started reading things that was like, this isn't a well-written romantic relationship. So I feel like I guess if you're looking for like the first thing that kind of came in after that, especially after like reading manga for so long where most of the romantic relationship are just god awful, was probably like Good Ending, where I was like, oh, okay, you can write like good romance in manga. Generally speaking, this is pretty boring or awful. I guess to a smaller extent, Haru and Ellie from Rave Master, because it's the only time I've read a romance in a shonen manga up to that point that had been like not just horrible. So that's kind of where my mind's at.
It might be Cory and Topanga. That's the best answer I can come up with. So, okay.
It works.
More questions. More questions from that guy from your forum, Chris.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Hello, Y. Remember when the nobles in Black Clover used to speak until they devolved into high-pitched gibberish? I missed that, ruler of time. That's nothing. Remember when... And I don't remember this in the slightest. Remember when Midora was a surfer dude who just wanted to eat turkey for like one episode?
It must have happened. It's the thing that I'll mention a thousand times. I forget 90% of the stuff we say in episodes, so people will like come up and reference them to me or do things like that. And I'm always just like, oh yeah, I guess we did do that at one point, right?
We do this podcast for a minimum of like 2 hours a week. So we do 100 hours a year, and we've been doing it for like over 5 years. So that's literally like you could listen to Weekly Manga Recap for a month straight and not listen to the same episode twice. There you go. Like, we don't remember everything.
I just have a bad memory in general for things, so I blame it on that.
Anyway, actual questions. What are some moments from minor characters that make you remember them? Characters that don't do a lot in the grand scheme of the series, but certain moments make them stand out. My example here would be Hannibal from the Impel Down arc from One Piece, the moment where he faces down the entire group of escaped prisoners and refused to move. Character in a very memorable one.
When Ichiu took hold of the Blue Pegasus' vessel and drove it into Akalaja, making heroic sacrifice, that was a really big moment that established itself for me. It's a great one.
It's okay. It's okay if you're never going to be able to let that go, because there's only like 7 chapters of this series.
I know. So. I hope they're all about fucking Ichiu and the different things he accomplishes.
To Bon Clay.
Yeah, Bon Clay is a good
answer. Right around the same time in One Piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of good moments, honestly, but he's a very minor character in the grand scheme of things.
One Piece has a lot of them, too. I'm trying to, like, not go into the realm of One Piece too much.
What was his name? The teacher, the instructor in the Chunin exam who gave them the written exam.
Oh, the guy who been the tortured. Lecture.
Yeah, he gave them the lecture about, about how important it is to not betray your friends. You know, those who don't know anything are scum, but those who give up their friends are worse than scum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. That's a good one. I feel like I should know more off the top of my head, but I'm really blanking on it.
I think it was
I just can't stop thinking about Ichiu sacrificing himself by driving that boat in Akalaja and trapping him in the side dimension. It's just so beautiful.
Oh, man. Got me right here in the heartstrings.
Yeah. Just as beautiful as he is.
What's this box-faced cat buddy going to think?
Who knows? I hope that the rest of the series is just an actual flashback to the different adventures that he's had with that stupid cat about... You know, like, they're like, hey, the story of Fairy Tale is actually over. We need to take a step back and honor the sacrifice.
He sounds so depressed right now.
Honor the sacrifice that Ichiu and Anna made at the end of the series.
Let's go back and look back at all of the wonderful moments that we've had with Anna.
I will remember.
Okay, that was it.
It's just the shot of her showing up.
She just shows up. I'm Anna.
It's just the Brayden Walker fucking video again, where it's just the same three things shown over and over.
Those three DVDs that showcase that one time he showed up backstage, that one time he had a match, that other time he showed up backstage.
That one time he talked to Matt Hardy backstage, and then finally, his last match is like, leave the memories alone place.
Question 2. What are some devil fruits that haven't shown up in One Piece that you would really like to see? variation of this question before.
I'm still expecting at some point for there to be like a wind devil fruit. It's very possible that someone already has it that's in the story and we just haven't seen them use it yet. Like it could be like dragon's devil fruit or something like that.
It's such a basic, you know, elemental thing that it seems like it's being saved for something very important.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think there's any other like power that's just not been used yet in One Piece? And I feel like One Piece has over time done most of like the standbys or gotten close to them. So there's not any that I'm just like, I can't believe One Piece hasn't had somebody with like shape manipulating power or something like that. Like they've done that, you know?
Question 3. Now for one of my infamous wacky hypotheticals. What happened if the cast of My Hero Academia and the cast of Food Wars switched? What kind of quirks would the Food Wars cast get, and what kind of cooking styles would young heroes end up with? Someone would have to get something that relied on, I think that he could like pick up different things, in a similar way to Sun Eater. Bizarre ways to accomplish what he wanted. Shonen Hero that he would combine like various materials together into bizarre contraptions in order to, the badass bearded Aquaman. Yeah. Let's see here. Trying to think of a way to convert like spice into something for Ayama. What's a bizarre one that I could, what's a bizarre character I could choose from? I don't know, fucking like Ibusaku would be All Might or something like that. Just some unimportant character just gets to be the Superman of the series. Why not?
I'm mostly just like, fucking Jonah, haven't you learned by this point? Stop sending in questions with this goddamn many of a vague concept of us to have to answer. Like, hey, gave everyone from Food Wars this thing, and then take everyone from My Hero and say something else for them to explain. We can't do these, all right?
And I don't know enough about food to do the other way around. So.
This is why we're still in February.
All right, next one, then.
Hey, this is from Gelly Elfson, who says, Nick and Chris, I have a possibly weird question for you. I was reading this manga series set in the 90s about a character who loves playing arcade games and has a spirit guide in the form of Guile from Street Fighter.
That sounds awesome.
That does. I want to know what it is. If you could choose a video game character to be your spirit guide slash animal, it could be a Pokemon, a monster, or even an enemy boss, who would you pick?
Can I kill Navi?
Good answer. Let me see. I'm assuming I can't just take Donald Duck from Kingdom Hearts because it's kind of cheating. Well, no, he talks. He's just like, Crash, you should be going. You haven't done your workout today. I'm like, shut up, Donald. You don't do anything. You don't pay bills, put on pants.
Why do you wear shirts but not pants?
Stop judging me, Donald. I feel like I want to almost pick a Mass Effect character, like Thane or Legion, be really fun. Then there's also like some Final Fantasy. I want Orin from Final Fantasy X. I want him to be like that, like just awesome mentor character, like that old samurai dude mentor character who just like he gives me like cryptic or shitty advice, but it's all meant to make me a better person. Like, I'm just like, Orin, what should I do about this job? He's like, I don't know. Figure it out yourself. But in the end, I know he had total faith in me all along. Also, it turns out he's been dead. Spoilers for Final Fantasy X.
Oh, no!
It's actually kind of sad, actually, now that I think about it. Oh, no.
All right. Next one comes from Pheasant Tail. Dear Y-Ruler, the indefinite continued process of existence and events that occur in apparently irreversible succession from the past through the present to the future. Okay, I got through that one. And, Rollo, in regards to the dating advice you mentioned in the February Q&A, yes, you are most certainly right. Never refer to yourself as a nice guy on a dating profile or really anywhere. It's basically a big red flag that the person's a douche, though for what it's worth, I think you're a thumbs up with a capital.
Aw. Sweetness. Someone out there will validate me. Take that, Dad. I don't need you anymore.
All right, we've got another list question for this one, but this will be a little bit easier, honest answer. Blow is a list of characters from various manga that you guys cover regularly, past and present. If these characters were all mangaka, what real-life manga? Let's just starting off with Gremy.
So
he would be a big One Piece fan, and he would... an actual one. Shit. Oh.
So yeah, they have to make a real series, what one would they be? So Gremy thinks he's very powerful and imaginative, but ends up actually creating something that's really just super boring. So I feel like he'd make Black Clover, now that I think about it. Like, they think it's really creative and sharp, and you're like, it's really just a bunch of spell series with swords and shit. Like, nothing in this is new.
I felt like
I'm not trying to be super shitty or mean to Black Clover. Just like when I came to my mind, I'm like, you know, Black Clover doesn't do anything new. It just, you know, and there's no way I'm getting out of this. I'm sorry. Honestly, it's just
calling a series out on being unimaginative. You could just make one of the billion different romantic comedies that all have the same premise.
True.
Frosh. From a fairy tale. I don't really know enough about Frosh, the actual character. I just know that I hate him.
Frosh doesn't say anything very much. Frosh just kind of like sits around and agrees. So it's just like a very much a boring kind of like yes man sort of thing.
So something very like corporate, very non-controversial, I guess.
So Black Clover again.
Come on, man.
Sorry. Now I've dug myself into this hole. I'm just going all the way.
All right, Zebra from Toriko.
Black Clover. Yeah. Now,
the saga, like,
yeah,
or Berserk or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. He's so intense and everything like that. He'd do one.
Henten from Naruto. She would do something where the weapons master wins all the fights.
Or
it'd be fairy tale, honestly. Like, Shigaraza is the ace. You know, maybe the side character uses swords and stuff.
In like a meta commentary, she does a comedy series where none of the punchlines hit. So, just I find like some really like.
So
bad
Black Clover.
Yeah, so Black Clover, where none of the jokes are funny.
I'm the best.
Check that. Ooh, I got another angry text message from Annalise. What's this about?
Bartolomeo. Oh, I skipped over one, but we'll go back to it. The answer can't be One Piece for Bartolomeo.
Which is tough. That's so significant to what he is.
Right. This is kind of going off of the, fairy tales rip off of One Piece thing, but honestly, I think it would be something like Fairy Tale, where it's like, it's a lot of stuff that keeps in and presentation of One Piece, but it's not quite as effective because he's too much of a fanboy.
Yeah, that actually is probably the best answer for him.
The bros from the Polaris Storm as a writer-artist duo.
So I'll tell you one I feel like they should do, but they couldn't possibly. It would be Freezing, but they're not smart enough to do the parts of it.
Not smart enough
to
try and do
the... They don't have the stuff beyond the tits and fan service that most of it defines that series, but I feel like they would love Freezing. So that's where my mind goes to with them.
So, I'm gonna go with Mayo Tome. Do you remember that fucking one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they do that. Yeah, the boob Vulcan cannon shit.
They're enormous,
yeah,
and the vibration is sending out tremendous shockwaves, like they would totally go.
Yeah, that's right in their level.
That's slightly less creepy, but also less intellectual Freezing, so. Mm-hmm. Stupid Black Clover, cause, yeah. Might as well do it for all of them.
I'm like, Black Clover, really? Well, no, it's only the insulting ones. When it's one that's like, this person's smart, I'd be like, well, anything but Black Clover then at that point.
Isabella, something sadistic, Black Clover. Isabella, ooh. It would probably be something that would be like really disturbing.
No, like, here's actually the thing. It wouldn't be. She would do something like Yatsubata, right? Because she wants her kids to have as much fun and be as comfortable as possible. So she would just give them something that would be very fun and innocent for a child. So I feel like something like Yatsubata or Usagi Drop before the awful parts. Like,
just Usagi Drop because she's got fucked up perception of parenthood because she's, you know, been broken by demons.
That as well.
You were basically going where I was going, though, where it's creepy because she's the one writing it as opposed to the manga itself. Creepy. Osamu.
My hero. It's all a series about a dude who's trying and trying, and then he would also, it's also a series that's about, like, everyone else that's not the main character also having a chance to show off, so.
Yeah, and that's his role as the leader of the team, so.
Yeah, I feel like that'd be right up his alley.
It took me forever to figure out who this was supposed to be, because the name is unfortunately spelled wrong, and I literally could not figure out how it was supposed to be spelled, but I think it's supposed to be Gauss from Black Clover.
Oh, Akisora then, right?
Yeah, sister fetish one. Yeah. Well, no, that wouldn't work because that's an older sister fetish one.
Oh. Oof.
The Little Sister Fetish series. Orinoyamoto is not a manga, so. There's a sister fetish one. I'm sure that someone could name one. It just none are coming to mind immediately, so there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I think we did it.
Yeah, we're done. Yeah.
All right. So let's, we want to finish this up with one last question.
One or two more. Yeah. I mean, we just hit March, so.
Yeah. All right. So this one's from Andre Golden Deer, Snow White, the Ruler of the Seven Dwarves, and Pinocchio T. I guess I got the better one out of the two of us. Oh.
It at least goes with what you're actually like.
What? I'm a wood boy who lies a lot and turns into a donkey, but I do love Geppetto, so.
No, okay, I meant just the structure of your name.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I recently watched a new trailer for the live-action Beauty and the Beast movie, and that inspired me to ask you these questions. Number one, what was that one Disney movie you loved as a kid?
I mean, I loved a lot of Disney movies as a kid, I'll be honest.
If I'm to give, like, one answer, it's probably Fox and the Hound. And it's mostly because I watched that one so frequently. It was the movie, like, when I went to my grandma Mahoffer, that was the movie we watched at her place. And it's weird. It's not... It's a sad as fuck movie. Like, it's not like a fun movie in the same way that like the other ones were. It's like Aladdin, where it's like, hey, this guy adventures around Agrabah and shit. It's like, hey, these two fucking animals are best friends. Then they're not anymore. It's like, oh. Then one maybe dies. It's like, oh. But, I mean, I loved that movie as a kid. Like, I can still get, like, really, like, go back to that point of a childhood the moment I hear, like, the Best of Friends song come in. It's good shit.
I think that if I had to choose one that I probably watched the most often and loved the most was probably Aladdin.
I can see that. That's like right around the right time for us, yeah. Two.
I watched a bunch of them though, so.
Who is your favorite Disney villain? I would say probably Scar. Scar's a good one. Just cause I love like the deliciously evil like villains, and he's like the moment he's cornered and like trying to talk his way out of it, it's just him like being like, oh no, Mufasa just looked like he was slipping. It's like, you shithead. Like, what a fuck.
Gaston, for like completely opposite reasons. He's so goddamn over the top ridiculous and full of himself. I think he is hilarious, so.
Yeah. And the last one here is, which Disney movie do we think is hot garbage? I'm like trying to look through the list right now.
I've never seen a bunch of the ones from the mid-2000s. You know, like I never saw Brother Bear. I never saw Home on the Range. Tell you what I did see though. And I think that shit was shit.
What one?
So there you go. Treasure Planet.
Ah, okay. You know, it's easy to go for a lot of those ones in like the early mid 2000s, stuff like that. Oh fuck, James and the Giant Peach was an option. James and the Giant Peach. Sorry, I was about to go on this big thing about
being
like.
Was that actually a Disney movie?
Yes, it's a Disney movie. It was made by, according to this, yeah, it was. I see this whole thing. I was about to lead up to this point of being like, I'm going to go with something that's a big time movie and make a point about that. Like, I'm going to make my Disney movie hot take. And then I realized James the Giant Peach was like, oh, fuck that movie. I still don't get it.
If I have to go over one that I saw more recently, it's probably The Black Cauldron. It's so boring. And it's based off of a set of books that is really, really good. Mm-hmm. But it's a boring as fuck movie. So, I think in terms of like least to offer you, it's probably that one.
All right. Thank you for the question, Andre.
Yeah. Also, there's a PS for me.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. PS, Nick probably doesn't remember this, but did he say Power Rangers Time Force was his favorite season or Lightspeed Rescue?
Probably because I talked about them around the same time, I guess, when they got brought up. Lightspeed Rescue was actually the season that made me stop watching Power Rangers. It just didn't interest me. And I started watching again briefly for Time Force because I really liked it. So
is Time Force your favorite part or?
Yeah.
Okay. There we go.
And, yeah, I think we'll close out there then.
All right then. That is going to do it for our Q&A for the month of June then. Thank you everybody for coming and listening in. And for those of you who are listening at home or wherever you're listening to this, I hope you enjoyed it. Well, people can listen at work. They can listen on the way to work. They could listen out in the park.
Like people,
they could
like
be listening
somewhere to listen to us.
they could be out on the run. Like, Nick, I don't control where people listen.
Weekly Margarita Cap Q&A is filled before our live studio audience.
Yeah, which is weird. Nobody's been laughing at our jokes except for us, so that's a bad sign. But guys, if you want to send in a question to us, I know that we just mentioned we're getting into March, but we will get to these questions eventually. So if you have any, and we again encourage you to send in, we'd rather have more than not enough. So if you want to send a question, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. And also, don't forget, we asked a question, so if you want to send an answer into us, which is give us your biggest hot take on manga, you can send that along as well to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com.
And I think we covered everything, so...
Yep. So, let's get out of here, Nick. Let's ride off.
Let's
into
blow
that...
this popsicle stand.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell that means.
Where does this anger for popsicle stands come from? I mean, first and foremost, I don't see popsicle stands anymore, so I don't know like what the phrase comes from. So, I feel like popsicle stands have gotten a very unneeded prejudice against them.
I guess it might be that the implication is that you are comparing the current place that you are at to a popsicle stand, but yeah.
There's times when a popsicle stand's great. Like, what if I'm like, oh man, it's really hot out. I really want something cold to put my mouth around. And someone's like, well, I have either this popsicle or this, dildo I just got out of the freezer. I'm like, well, I don't want to be a popsicle stand. That's the place everybody gets out of. So give me that dildo. Oh, it's so cold. Oh.